With the latest in agriculture news from across the state and the country, it's Farm City Newsday. And here's your host, Sabrina Hill.
Good morning. Happy Monday. Thanks for turning on the radio this morning for your agriculture news. Today is Monday, September 25th. Coming up in today's show, a new plan for a guest worker program. We have more on that in a moment, but first we start this morning with Brian German.
The FDA recently announced the availability of small entity compliance guides to assist small operations conform to the produce safety portion of the Food Safety Modernization Act. The guides will help farmers understand how the requirements of the produce safety rule apply to them and assist in determining whether they qualify for an exemption. Food safety specialist for the Community Alliance with Family Farmers, Kaylee Firesile, explained what operations are eligible for exemption.
A farm is fully exempt if you grow produce only for personal or on-farm consumption, if you grow produce that is on the FDA's rarely consumed as raw list, if you grow produce that goes through a kill step, for example, tomatoes that go and are processed into tomato sauce, or if you don't fit any of those initial categories, you could still be fully exempt if you have $25,000 or less in annual produce sales from your farm.
I'm Brian German for AgNet West Radio Network.
This week, a USDA trade mission is exploring American ag export opportunities in Brazil. Stephanie Ho has more.
USDA's next agricultural trade mission is to Brazil.
We chose Brazil because it's changed a lot in the last 20 years.
That was Mark Slupek, Deputy Administrator of the Office of Trade Programs.
Brazil's growing population and rising per capita income, coupled with the fact that Brazilian consumers have a high regard for U.S. products and brands, make this a market that's currently underserved by the United States and one well worth exploring for American exporters.
Brazil does compete with the United States with some ag commodities on the world market.
But it's also a major importer. In 2016, Brazil imported $10 billion worth of product from around the world. We want to be part of that.
Last year, Brazil purchased nearly $1.4 billion in agricultural and related products from the United States. The top exports include ethanol, wheat, prepared foods, and dairy products. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
A National Pork Board delegation is home after an important trade mission to Southeast Asia. The group spent time in two very different but significant markets for U.S. pork. National Pork Board President Terry O'Neill says the trip began in Tokyo, Japan.
And then we visited four cities in China. We visited the city of Shanghai, Zhengzhou, and finally Beijing, where we wrapped up with the U.S.-China swine industry symposium, and Bill Even and I spoke at that symposium.
Bill Even is the chief executive officer for the National Pork Board. The Pork Checkoff partners with the U.S. Meat Export Federation for international trade promotion. USMEF has been working in Japan for 40 years. O'Neill says Japan is a high-value market.
It's safety and quality first. And then after that, you have to have those relationships built. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to sell in that country. Yeah, you know, price is somewhat secondary, especially in Japan. So they want the best product. And in particular, for our product, is chilled. United States and Canada are two of the major exporters that can export chilled product into Japan, and they prefer that taste. So, and Canada right now is our biggest competitor. They are importing a lot of chilled pork into Japan.
O'Neill, who is a Nebraska pork producer, says this was an eye-opening experience. He sees great opportunity for U.S. pork exports in both Japan and China. Virginia Republican Representative Bob Goodlatte will introduce a bill this week that would replace the H-2A guest worker program. The bill is titled the Agricultural Guest Worker Act and would replace the program that many in agriculture use to find labor. A Packer.com article says he told the United Fresh Produce Conference in Washington, D.C. that his program would reduce red tape for growers and be a significant improvement on the H-2A program. The bill would include greater access to workers without a path to citizenship, higher wages, which would be 15% above a state's minimum wage, no requirement for worker housing or transportation, and allows currently illegal farm workers to participate in the program. He says the bill replaces H-2A with a more efficient guest worker program known as H-2C, that's designed to meet the needs of a diverse agriculture industry. He goes on to say the program will be run by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, an agency that clearly understands the unique needs of farmers and ranchers, as well as the importance of getting perishable commodities to the market in an efficient manner. And House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway of Texas spoke about the H2C program during the Farm Bill listening session held recently in Modesto.
Well, the two answers to that. One, Chairman Goodlatte, who serves also in the Ag Committee, has a proposal called an H2C visa program, in which would address direct labor for farm and processing. It would move it the compliance out of the Department of Labor into the Department of Ag, expand the program, provide what appears to be a rational step forward in addressing the labor that would still be there. Research with respect to mechanization and robotics and all those kind of good things, again, that's a part of the decision-making process that we'll make moving forward. In conjunction with Goodlatte's bill, there's an E-Verify bill that Lamar Smith wants to move. Lamar has moved his position to the point that he would stagger the implementation of mandatory E-Verify, largest corporations first, next to the rest of the folks in the middle, and then ag would be 2.5-3 years out before they'd have to comply for new employees, allowing Bob Goodlatte's H2C visa program to take root and move forward to get everybody into compliance, kind of in conjunction with the same thing. Bob wants to move both of those bills in September, the last time I talked to him. That's a big step forward from what we typically talk about when we talk about immigration, worker programs, everything else. Bob actually wants to move that. So I would encourage all the folks, the producers here in California who could take access or benefit from the H2C, that new program, to get in the mix, understand what it does, if there are things that you can propose that would make it better, a more straightforward implementation process, all those kind of things that would benefit the folks that's trying to benefit. Let's get in that action right now.
Again, House Agriculture Committee Chairman Mike Conaway. This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. I'm your host, Sabrina Hill. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Set sail for Madison, Wisconsin, and discover new dairy worlds October 3rd through the 7th at the 2017 World Dairy Expo. For 5 days, the global dairy industry meets at the Align Energy Center to view the finest dairy cattle and dairy trade shows in North America. Virtual farm tours, expo seminars, youth contests, and social activities make Expo an ideal location for learning and networking. Visit worlddairyexpo.com to plan your trip today.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Welcome back to Farm City News Day by AgNet West. Here's Taylor Hillman with an update on the prune harvest.
The California prune harvest is finishing up, and the industry is having a bounce-back year. Last year, the California prune harvest tallied just under 53,000 tons, a number that reflected weather challenges during the 2016 season. The U.S. Department of Agriculture is forecasting the 2017 crop to be 105,000 tons, a 99% increase over 2016. The California Dried Plum Board reports that this year the industry is returning to a normal size harvest that will help meet consumer and trade demands.
The harvest, like a lot of other crop harvests this year, started a little later than expected, which extended the season. Growers are reporting a good crop. Taylor Brother Farms Vice President and owner John Taylor told the California Dried Plum Board that they're seeing strong, highly productive orchards and delicious premium caliber fruit that sets the global gold standard for prunes. I'm Taylor Hillman for AgNet West Radio Network.
The American Farm Bureau Federation has submitted regulatory reform priorities to the Department of Agriculture. Michael Clements has more.
AFBF used comments from Farm Bureau members to submit suggestions for regulatory reform to USDA as part of the agency's efforts to implement the president's regulatory reform agenda. Paul Schlegel, AFBF's Director of Environment and Energy Policy, says overregulation by federal agencies is burdensome to all of agriculture.
It's hard to look at it nationally and say there's X amount of dollars, but it's significant. It runs from environment to natural resources to labor to endangered species. There's a whole range of things. And it is widespread and it takes place everywhere.
For example, he says regulatory creep has chipped away at the exemptions for normal farming practices under the Clean Water Rule.
How an agency would determine what is normal can affect whether you're exempt or not. So if you're changing from one crop to another, an agency might say they don't consider that normal. Those things have the effect of making farmers subject to regulation, whereas Congress has said they shouldn't be.
USDA will continue to accept comments over the next year. Schlegel says this is a good opportunity to ease the overregulation burden on farmers and ranchers.
Unfortunately, it's a long list of challenges, but we're grateful for the opportunity we have. On Capitol Hill, there's legislation we're pushing, and in the arena downtown at EPA, at USDA, at Department of Interior, we're trying to get them to focus on things and make some changes.
Michael Clements, Washington.
Well, in today's livestock news, landowners across the country are being reminded the deadline to make comments on the Waters of the U.S. or WOTUS rule repeal effort is this coming Wednesday, September 27th. The Environmental Protection Agency, along with the Army Corps of Engineers, will accept comments through that date. Now, the EPA formally proposed to repeal the rule back in late June, and the Trump administration plans to separately write a new regulation to replace the rule. Comments on the repeal effort can be submitted online at regulations.gov. Plus, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association encourages producers to make comments. They have a special page set up on their website with information to make it easy to submit comments. You can go to their website, that's beefusa.org, to learn more. Plus, here's a reminder, the EPA and Army Corps have started their stakeholder sessions to give those involved an opportunity to provide recommendations on a revised definition of WOTUS. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt said, receiving input from across the country will help us make informed decisions as we move through our two-step process that will return power to the states and provide regulatory certainty to our nation's farmers and businesses. Now, the stakeholder sessions began last week and will be held on a weekly basis each Tuesday through November 21st. Each will run from 1 till 3 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, and information on how to register for each of these meetings is available on the EPA website. Now, the meeting designed strictly for agriculture is coming up on October 17th. Now, that EPA website is just strictly epa.gov/WOTUS rule. That's epa.gov/WOTUS rule. But again, a reminder, if you would like to make a comment concerning the WOTUS rule repeal effort, you have until this coming Wednesday, September 27th, to do so. Now, you can just simply go to regulations.gov. That's regulations.gov. Or if you'd rather go through the National Cattlemen's Beef Association website, which has direct information on how to do everything, that is beefusa.org. But be sure to make your comments again by this coming Wednesday, September 27th. And a report by CoBank shows that U.S. milk production growth is outpacing processing capacity growth, thus leaving dairy processors struggling to keep pace. Every year, U.S. dairy farmers produce 3 billion more pounds of milk than the year before. CoBank says that those increased challenge processors, who will need an estimated 27 billion pounds of more U.S. milk processing capacity over the next 10 years if current trends persist. The report says numerous new plants and plant expansion projects are underway or recently completed, but available capacity remains a challenge at times, especially in the Northeast and Mid-Eastern states, and has strained the ability of dairy cooperatives to fill the role of market balancers. Since these co-ops largely bear the brunt of the near-term oversupply of milk, they're increasingly looking for ways to discourage producers from expanding production. I'm Randall Wiseman for Agnet West. AgriView with Everett Greiner is next.
All right, you're taking your wife or meeting friends at your favorite restaurant for dinner. You scan the menu, you probably look at the prices, but how important is it to you that the menu includes such things as the calories, the sugar, and other health factors? Well, there are a few who'd be interested. In fact, they're suing the Food and Drug Administration because it isn't on the menu. FDA instituted such a rule back in 2015, but they never put a starting date on it, so they're being sued. Our country has long had the safest, healthiest, and the most abundant food supply on earth. Having the health factors printed on the menu won't change the way our farmers produce it, nor will it improve the taste. You want what you order? It's prepared and served the way you want it. That's what's important, and it should be enough. And that's AgriView for today. Everett Greiner, Agnet West.
The latest edition of The Feed, Farmer Mac's quarterly perspective on agriculture, provides in-depth analysis on trade, tax deductions, and land values, among other topics important to farmers and ranchers. Michael Clements has more.
The summer-fall 2017 publication of The Feed is the eighth edition of the quarterly analysis, marking 2 years since Farmer Mac made The Feed available publicly. Jackson Takish, Farmer Mac economist and author of The Feed, says it has received a warm welcome.
I've been writing this for about 10 years internally for our senior management and our Farmer Mac board, but the reception that we've got since we took it public 2 years ago has been incredibly humbling. I mean, we've got people reading it from all parts of the country, lenders, government institution members, academia, media, and most importantly, I think, the farmers and ranchers across this great country. That's really who Farmer Mac is here to serve at the end of the day. It's been a real rewarding thing to work on, and I'm so happy that we've had this warm reception to taking it public a couple years ago.
Takish says trade is currently one of the top issues farmers and ranchers should focus on. Specifically, as covered in the most recent edition of The Feed, he says the North American Free Trade Agreement is vital to the success of agriculture.
Agriculture, as the third A in NAFTA. NAFTA is an incredibly important part of the agricultural trade picture, so I think being involved and informed on NAFTA renegotiations is incredibly important. 30% of all U.S. ag exports go to Mexico and Canada. That's a huge chunk, and it's nearly double what it was prior to NAFTA. So farmers and ranchers need to care about what NAFTA means, what's happening with it, and keep the relationship and lines of communication open with our partners to the north and to the south.
Also in the most recent edition, deductions for farm equipment. He says there are pros and cons on when to take a tax deduction after buying new equipment, and they cover what matters when farmers are investing in farm machinery.
How important is that advanced depreciation schedule? So, and it always feels good not to have a huge tax bill in the spring, but is that really what should motivate a farmer from making that investment? And what we found in the research team was the most important factors are not the depreciation and the ability to sort of avoid that tax payment in year one. It's actually the productivity of that machine. What type of cash flows can you get out of that machine over the next, say, 10 years? And then what will that machine be worth when you need to trade it in?
Other topics covered include interest rates and land values.
Using the USDA data as sort of the benchmark, we've noticed that land values up a little bit in 2017, and that may buck some trends, and it may also seem a little bit odd to some folks. So I think that's an important article that we included this quarter. Fourth, I'll mention interest rates. No one really knows where interest rates will go. What will the Fed do? What will happen with long-term rates for real estate and machinery financing? So I think it's interesting to look at the recent trends as well as what are the outlooks for both the short and long-term ends of the curve. And finally, I think there's a really interesting tool that our Senior VP of Ag Finance, Kurt Covington, mentions in his introductory letter called SWOT analysis.
The Feed is available online for free, and you can subscribe to the quarterly analysis to have it delivered to your email.
We made it a really easy process to receive The Feed. It's free, so there's absolutely zero cost to sign up. We do one each season, and we're going to release our winter edition early November. And to get a copy of the historical releases as well as the most recent one, go to our website, www.farmermac.com/thefeed. We do accept questions and comments, so we're welcoming of any suggestions to content that we can add or have if people have questions about the content that they read. We're also hosting a webinar, so if people are interested in hearing a little bit more and having a dialogue with myself and other authors in this issue of The Feed, we're going to be hosting a webinar on September 28th at 1 p.m., so you can sign up at farmermac.com.
Read the latest issue and subscribe online at www.farmermac.com/thefeed. Michael Clements reporting.
It may not be that unusual these days to see multiple combines in a field at harvest time. However, to see multiple makes and models harvesting the same field together is a bit more rare. Jared White has more on why folks in western Macon County, Illinois, saw that last week.
Several family farm operations from the Niantic area put their own harvest plans on hold Wednesday in order to help out a neighbor. Dan Stahl is just a few weeks removed from quadruple bypass heart surgery and was unsure of how he would get his 600-plus acres harvested this fall, but then the community came to his aid. Dan's cousin Steve Stahl organized a community harvest and says the farming community in western Macon County really stepped up.
Got a community harvest today. My cousin Dan Stahl had quadruple bypass surgery 2 weeks ago today, so he's was going to be unable to harvest his crops this fall, and we kind of put this together pretty fast. We started out with 10 combines, trucks, and carts. I'm guessing, and you got to include the ladies that fixed sack lunches for everybody today. I think they fixed about 60 sack lunches because we fed the people at the elevator also. So probably close to 35 people. I've never participated in one of these community harvests before. I guess our community has been fortunate that we hadn't had to do this since I've been farming. Everybody's willing to help. We're all neighbors, and we got some from Heliopolis clear to Harristown. So good group. Today's the day we're going to hopefully get all of his about 650 acres done today.
Craig Moore was one of the farmers cutting soybeans in the 90-degree heat. He thought it was great to see the community effort and emotionally noted that you never know when you might be the one in need.
I'm just cutting a few beans. Jeff Stahl and I, we cut 40 acres here for Dan, and then we're going to try and cut another 80 maybe this afternoon.
Why be a part of this? Why take time from your operation to do that?
You never know when it may be yourself out there, so just helping out a neighbor.
It's great to see the community come together like this.
Yes, it really is. Yeah. I mean, what better can you do than help out a neighbor?
Ed Leonard Jr. was one of several farmers harvesting corn as part of the effort. He too feels the day was just an example of what farming neighbors do.
Where I live is, I mean, I'm the neighbor to where he grew up, so I mean, we've been neighbors for generations, so they do it for us, I'm sure, too. They've kind of coordinated it to where, like I said, I live close by here, and then Steve and John Dunn also have the fields just down from it, so we're kind of taking this field out for him here next to his mother Dolores's place. And then there's some people that are kind of up north, some people to the west. Now I'm heading on to a second location that they need us to kind of help with today to try to get everybody in the right place and get it done.
The Stahls were grateful for the support of the community. Steve says Dan is on the mend and was even able to watch a bit of the harvest.
Told everybody be careful and thanks for helping, and it's just working out really great. He seemed to be pretty good. I seen him this morning. He was sitting outside under the shade tree. I think this is kind of emotional for him, but I think he's got to have a good feeling that he's not going to have to worry about this after today. Everybody likes to harvest. I think he's going to miss it in the combine this fall, but he got another year, so hopefully he'll do it next year.
The group was pleasantly surprised with both the bean and corn yields they were seeing, especially considering the challenging growing season western Macon County saw this year. I'm Jared White reporting.
This is Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. We will be back in just a moment with more agriculture news.
Set sail for Madison, Wisconsin, and discover new dairy worlds October 3rd through the 7th at the 2017 World Dairy Expo. For 5 days, the global dairy industry meets at the Align Energy Center to view the finest dairy cattle and dairy trade shows in North America. Virtual farm tours, expo seminars, youth contests, and social activities make Expo an ideal location for learning and networking. Visit WorldDairyExpo.com to plan your trip today.
The Citrus Research Board invites the citrus industry to attend this year's California Citrus Conference on Wednesday, October 11th in Visalia. Join the CRB at 7:30 for registration and a free breakfast. Sessions kick off at 9 with a focus on ACP control and HLB early detection technologies. California Ag Secretary Karen Ross will address attendees, followed by a free barbecue lunch. Afternoon sessions include post-harvest technologies, biocontrol, and the very latest in citrus breeding and varieties. Pre-register for this free conference online at citrusresearch.org.
Your local DuPont Pioneer team doesn't take with you from the word go lightly, especially when it comes to forages. Just ask your fellow producers, folks like Amos Smith.
We have an awesome support team from Pioneer. I think that they're probably one of the reasons why we are successful.
And Bruce Cullum.
They'll come out just anytime you want to call them and help us. You don't get that from all your other seed dealers, but these guys are here all season long.
As well as Ken Felt.
Just know that, you know, the research that Pioneer's done, it really, it shows, and that the cows really do well with it, so we continue to use it.
Or Billy Rucker.
All in all, you know, seem like Pioneer is always in the top. I bleed green, and I bleed Pioneer.
Want a team that's with you from the word go? That's DuPont Pioneer. Ask them about leveraging the silage zone resource to produce the highest quality forages for your operation. Pioneer, with you from the word go.
Welcome back to Farm City Newsday by AgNet West. Now more of the agriculture stories you'll want to know today. Farmers have until the end of this month to decide if they'd like to take USDA's new Margin Protection Crop Insurance Plan. Todd Gleason has more.
Known as MP, the program closely aligns with the current ARP, or Area Revenue Protection Crop Insurance Plan. University of Illinois agricultural economist Gary Schnitke says while there are differences, the one of note is the price-setting period. It locks in input prices, the margin, based on corresponding futures traded in Chicago for urea, DAP, diesel fuel, and interest rates.
The other side of it, that you might be interested in is setting a projected price now versus in February. So we know that our projected prices for margin insurance are $3.96 for corn and $9.66 for soybeans. So we do know those now. So if you wanted to set those now, you could use margin protection. You could also go up to a 95% coverage level. So that would be an advantage.
The U of I Schnitke doesn't see any compelling reason for ARP users to switch to margin protection. And while the plan could be coupled with RP, he thinks the number of takers there will be limited. I'm Todd Gleason.
The number of human deaths from rabies is low in the United States, but the majority of those cases come from an unexpected animal. Stephanie Ho has the story.
Kara Crawford's lesson about rabies began uneventfully.
I was staying at the church on a mission trip, and we were sleeping there, going out to work during the day and then spending the night there, and a bat got in the building, possibly more than one.
For most people, this may not seem like that big of a deal, but Amy Gilbert, a research biologist with USDA's National Wildlife Research Center, says many people don't realize that bats can transmit rabies to humans.
On average, there's probably about 2 to 4 cases of human rabies each year in the United States. And for cases that were acquired within the United States, most of these are linked to rabies circulation in bats.
Bats are not the only mammals in the wild that are rabies vectors. They're not even the ones that humans would most likely be exposed to.
There are a number of wild carnivore species in the United States. It's primarily raccoons, striped skunks, coyotes, gray foxes that maintain circulation of rabies virus in nature.
But she says most people don't associate bats with rabies.
It may be that the exposures to bats are underappreciated by the general public in terms of being a rabies risk. And so that is at least part of the speculation as to why the fatal cases of rabies in humans are more likely to be linked to rabies circulation in bats than in the wild carnivores.
Jordana Kirby with USDA Wildlife Service's National Rabies Management Program says the first problem with bats is that many people don't even know when they've been exposed to them.
For example, if someone finds a bat in their home, whether it's in their bedroom when they're sleeping or something like that, because most bat species are so small, in times when a person is bitten, they may or may not know if they've actually been bitten by the bat.
And since rabies is transmitted via saliva, this is an important thing to know.
I've seen bat bites, and I mean, literally, it could be about the size of a pinprick, and it could look like absolutely nothing on your skin.
So with this background information as context, we return to Kara's story.
A bat got in the building, possibly more than one, and because the walls didn't go to the ceiling, the bat was able to get in all the rooms. Therefore, it was able to get in the kitchen where food was prepared and then where we were sleeping.
She says no one in her church group felt that they had been bit.
We had little cuts and things like that, so there was really no way of knowing if that little baby puncture that was on your arm was a bat bite or just a consequence of the construction work.
So, of course, members of her group were instructed to receive the post-exposure shots, which Kara says she's glad she did.
The peace of mind, I think. Every time I feel slightly nauseous or have a sore throat or something, I'd be scared that I have rabies as opposed to just a normal cold.
So it is important to know that humans can contract rabies through bats. Also, if there is a chance you may have been bitten or come into contact with the bat saliva, you should seek proper treatment immediately, because once you exhibit symptoms, it's too late. This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The National Weather Service is calling for above-normal temperatures in the contiguous U.S. over the last 3 months of 2017. The National Weather Service says the greatest chance of warmth comes in the Four Corners region between October and December. That could possibly mean areas to the east may need some springtime rains to be ready for the spring planting season next year. That fact may be made worse because of drought spreading across the Midwest, as well as drought conditions that remain across parts of the Northern Plains. The end-of-the-year forecast calls for above-normal precipitation in the Pacific Northwest. The forecast also calls for below-normal precipitation along the Gulf Coast and into Missouri. Below-normal precipitation is in the forecast for eastern Kansas and Oklahoma. Meanwhile, the rest of the country is equally split between normal, above-normal, and below-normal chances for precipitation. Idaho, North Dakota, and Montana wheat growers got some good news as Taiwan signed an agreement to buy a large amount of wheat that primarily comes from those three states. An Associated Press report says Idaho Governor Butch Otter signed an agreement with Taiwanese officials after Montana and North Dakota also signed agreements. Otter said, quote, "The consumption of wheat foods in Taiwan has now surpassed rice, and we appreciate that the Taiwan milling industry recognizes the quality of Idaho wheat. The Taiwanese Flour Millers Association represents 20 flour mills in the country. This is the 11th time that Taiwan has signed an agreement to buy U.S. wheat. Taiwan has about one-sixth the landmass of Idaho, but a population of more than 23 million people. The U.S. supplies more than 80% of its total wheat imports every year. With this new agreement, Taiwan will buy 1.8 million metric tons of wheat in 2018 and 2019. For more on any of the stories you've heard here this morning, visit our website at agnetwest.com. You can also find us on Twitter at agnetwest or myself at Sabrina W. Hill. This has been Farm City News Day by Agnet West, and I am your host, Sabrina Hill. Have a wonderful day.